taping it right now, beginning, and that way it'll be an MP4 A file that hopefully if people aren't able to join us can listen to later. So, okay, so if anyone hasn't already, if you could please mute your phones, unless you're, of course, asking a question.
Right. And I apologize in advance. This is Judy. We are open to the public, and I am the only staff here today. So while I will cover my phone when I'm not talking, because I expect to be talking a lot, I'm not going to be on mute. So if you hear even children, that's what's going on in Delaware.
Okay, well, in Miami County, I don't know how to mute my phone, and I'm also the only person here, but I will cover the phone as well.
Well, thank you, ladies. we'll do just fine. So anyways, today we're going to cover law library operations under the High Revised Code, Attorney General opinions, and other laws and opinions. And some specifics you may have seen from the materials are void appointments, staffing, space issues, our statutory responsibilities and obligations, public records, and open meetings laws. So we might as well just get started. Judy, you mind if I start us off?
No, go right ahead.
Okay, so obviously we all know that we were created under the High Revised Code, and that's 30751, and we were created in 09, and there should be one of us in every county in every county. But of course we know that we have different local practices, and while we have different responsibilities under the statutes, the implications or the implementation of those can be very different. So what we're going to try and do are cover the generalities today, and then recommend some best practices and people to contact in your local counties. So every county law library has 5 board members and 2 major responsibilities, and they're pretty big. Our first responsibility is to provide legal research and reference and services to our counties, our municipalities and townships, and all the courts within our counties. We're also supposed to manage and coordinate the acquisition and utilization of all legal resources. So that's a big, big order. Under the first responsibility, we are required to provide services to our local governments. It doesn't mean we have to pay for their resources. This is can be a stumbling block, I understand, some places. But we should try to maintain collections that service the needs of our constituents. And so, you know, whether you buy an online collection or a print collection is really driven by your local needs. So some CLLRBs have interpreted this language that we provide services to require that we provide public access. Whether or not that's true, as a practical matter, all of us are open to the public at least part of the week. So if you have a resource or in your county that you can share with others and maybe refer patrons back and forth, that's always a good idea. So this managing and coordination aspect of our responsibilities requires us to try and negotiate, you know, good deals that for our county agencies and negotiate with vendors that will save our county's money. Now, the courts are not required to participate. There's a separation of powers doctrine that would apply in this situation. But just from my perspective, courts here are participating in our countywide deals and reaping the benefits of significant savings. So a best practice we recommend is to make sure that all your county offices know of this obligation that you have, and maybe they'll want to jump on the bandwagon and participate in some of the deals that you're making with vendors. Okay. One other thing I'd like to mention before we move on to a different topic is that the statute requires that all county offices are required to receive our permission before they buy, lease, rent, operate, or contract for any legal reference or research materials. And that could be in print or online, audiovisual, any medium, absolutely. The reality may be that they don't realize they have this responsibility to ask you. they may not care. But technically, if there's an audit conducted, they should have received permission to buy Lexis or Westlaw or, you know, Baldwin's a High Revised Code. And again, this doesn't mean you have to pay for these resources, but they're supposed to get your pre-approval. And really, that's to achieve countywide contracting and cost savings as a group. However, I think the reality is, as it is in my county, that I don't have enough money to buy everything for anybody else. So I give blanket permission when they ask me, and then they are permitted to buy or lease it on their own. Okay? Judy, you want to talk about something so I can take a break?
Yeah. We do things just a little differently with the permission. We do it as part of our budget process in the fall. And I send email out to anybody that my auditor identifies as purchasing from any of the known legal resources vendors. And I say to them, I need your proposal for next year. We tell them if we have any money that the LLRB is willing to pay. And then we tell them, and you can buy anything else you want with your own resources. Most of the time, that means that they and I do not then have to do paperwork during the rest of the year, other than if I pay their invoices for them. It just saves on not getting a memo every 3 months when the prosecutor decides to buy something new. I've already told them I'm only buying X. You have permission to go ahead and buy Y with your own money. Every once in a while, we'll have a county initiative. For instance, we're looking at purchasing copies of the new Jim Crow rule about mass incarceration. And that is probably something the law library is going to buy for other departments because we think it's an important access to justice conversation. So there's many different ways to do this to be sure that you've covered that conversation.
Exactly. So so best practice is to probably design some kind of a, you know, email distribution or a letter. And I believe Mary Jenkins has shared copies of her sample, and other librarians can share samples if you'd like. Okay, so moving on to another topic. Well, there are probably a librarian in every CLLRB, or there should be, because by statute, each CLLRB is required to hire a librarian, and they can hire additional staff as necessary. We're all in the unclassified civil service, and technically, our board is supposed to set how much we get paid with potentially county approval. Importantly, we're supposed to promulgate rules. And Mary Jenkins has hers, I think, posted on her website, and we have ours posted. And what those things should cover are how you spend your money generally, whether or not you're open to the public and the rules for that, your hours of operation, what your fees are if you're charging for services, and the receipt of gifts, if you do it, and how you might accept gifts. So it's just a good idea to put those processes in writing. Now, I mentioned fees for services. Technically, we cannot charge anyone a fee for access to our law library at all, ever. However, we can charge for all kinds of services, and that's where we can derive revenue to supplement our fines and penalties. So what kind of things do we charge for? Potentially copies or printing at the computers. If you sell forms, you can do that. You can have book sales. You can put on continuing legal education programs or offer to do document delivery services, like send somebody an email for, you know, a fee. Or you could even do research, okay, as an added service. But all those monies have to go into your special revenue fund, and that's your CLLRB fund. We'll talk about that in a moment. Judy, any other kinds of services you charge for?
No, you've covered it.
Okay, great. So access and services are different things. Now, there are certain people you cannot charge for anything. and those include members of the General Assembly, like your senators and your congresspeople, and your employees of the county or city or township when they're acting within the scope of their employment. So that means, you know, if your public defender, your prosecutor, you know, wants to make copies, you give them a free copy card or let them use the machine for free. Interestingly enough, when we do an ILL, I still charge them because that's a service that I have to pay for out of pocket and I need to recoup it. So I hope I don't get in trouble. but technically the law says you cannot charge them. So another thing we wanted to cover is that when you are... you can enter into contracts, okay, with other community CLLRBs next door, with the consortium itself, like in a grant agreement we'll talk about, private entities or other public entities. And examples of those, my county law library has a contract or an agreement with the pre-existing private association. And we have a contract with the Cleveland Public Library. You have any, Judy?
We don't at this time.
Okay. So when you're contracting with these other entities, or even just with a vendor, you know, like Lexus or Westlock, you have to get pre-approval from your county. Everybody processes their contracts differently and their payments to vendors differently. Mine is very cumbersome here. So what we recommend is checking with your local budget office, your local fiscal office or auditor, to see what the processes are for those contract approvals. And it might be very easy. It could be very hard. So that's a best practice, is to talk to your local entities. Judy, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, let me just chime in on this one. I'm more than happy to share with people anything that I've negotiated with a vendor, anything I've negotiated with another one of my departments. But just please, please make a note that you always need to consult whoever has been assigned to your board from your county prosecutor. Even if it's just to shoot them an email to say, hey, I just got this one from Judy Maxwell, and I got this one from Mary Jenkins, and we're planning to do this, and does this look like an okay thing to do? 99 times out of 100, we already knew what we're doing, and we're fine. But I don't want any of you to get yourselves in a political nightmare because we forgot to go talk to the county prosecutor.
And that's a good point to make. Later on in the materials on page 4, your prosecutor represents you. Your CLLRB has the legal right to representation by the local prosecutor. And that's in ORC 309.09, and there's actually an attorney general opinion confirming that, and that's 2009-49. And that's not just for contracts. If you want them to review, you know, a contract, you can also ask your prosecutor for advice when you get a public records request, or you get a subpoena, or you just need other legal advice. You need an opinion about whether you can do something or not. So that's always a good resource locally. So, okay, so, you know, every CLLRB we know has 5 members. All the original appointments are over, so all appointments should now be for 5 years. And if you do have a vacancy, and we've had many of those here, you have to go back to your original appointing authority. And they're supposed to do it within 60 days. But technically, it's probably going to take longer. At least it does here. And when we have an opportunity to fill a vacancy, we are very proactive about making recommendations for candidates. Like, I'll cherry pick who I want, and I will talk to the local prosecutor or the local administrative or presiding judge. So that's definitely something that you may want to do, because you can oftentimes get someone on your board who is antagonistic to maybe the needs of the legal community, and maybe what the CLLRB could and should be doing. And so for libraries that still have a pre-existing private association, which was around before the county law libraries were created, you can have someone from that entity serve on your board as long as they disclose that dual relationship. So anything else, Judy?
Yeah, I'd also remind people that we do have, and I'm trying to put my fingers on it on the website, an AG's opinion talking about the prosecutor can serve on your board, but it's considered a conflict in many situations, so you have to be careful to record in your minutes that they have abstained from the discussion and they've abstained from the vote. It's really not recommended that they be the board appointee. It's better to have someone that's not employed by the prosecutor, but
yeah,
it's okay if they do.
And that opinion is listed on page 9 of our materials. It's 2009-49. And Judy's right, the county prosecutor cannot actually serve on your board. But an assistant prosecutor can, but they do have those limitations. And she mentioned a couple of them. They also can't really provide legal advice to the CLLRB, so you'll need a different prosecutor. Hopefully you have more than one. Assistant prosecutor, that is, to provide legal advice. They really can't help with the preparation of your county budget either. They have to abstain from all deliberations, like she mentioned, for certain situations. So I've got those listed in the materials. Okay, so anything else on that, Judy?
No, which I think just leads us right into the part about the meetings. Boards are supposed to meet 4 times a year. Personally, we try and do it quarterly, and then we tend to add additional meetings in the fall for budget. And we post those meeting dates as soon as we've decided on them in the fall. But the actual quarterly ones are always posted as a matter of the sunshine law. So be sure you talk to whoever your person at the county is to say, who do I post with? Who do I report to about my board meetings? Oftentimes, what your answer is going to be is, just put something up in the law library and don't bother us with that. And make a note that that's what you were told. And go do that. Some other places have gotten to be real sticklers and are going to tell you that you have to publish it in the county newsletter. You have to post it at the courthouse. Go find out what it is. Be sure you're in compliance. Personally, I've only ever had 2 incidents where I've had private attorneys want to gripe to my board. And they've come to meetings, but otherwise we just don't have people attending, but they are. To be open to the public.
That's right, and we post notice on our website and put up flyers in the building, which seems to be adequate here. But again, Judy's right, local practice will prevail. And if you do get someone who wants to be put on a list of notification of meetings, you actually have to send them special notice. That's part of the open meetings law. So when you do have a meeting, there's some kind of question, at least locally here, as to how many constitute a quorum. Well, it's 3 board members, so not a majority of those present. It's a majority of the board, and there are 5 on the board, so that means you have to have 3 to do any kind of votes, okay? You can still have a meeting, but you can't vote on anything without 3 people there. Okay, so annual budgets is the next topic, and vouchers. Absolutely. You participate in your local county budget process, and you're supposed to, under the statutes, prepare an annual budget of all your revenues and expenses. And you've probably already done this, but if you haven't, if you're new to our community, then you're going to probably be asked to kind of itemize and plan for salaries or wages and benefits, commodities, which could include like paper, pens, supplies, things like that. What might be called other operating, which could be books and databases. You might have a line item for controlled outlays, which is equipment or computer. And you may also have capital expenditures, if your county is rich, for renovations and construction. And you may have more detailed line items. Sometimes they're using index codes to represent your entity, and then object codes or sub-object codes for different line items in your budget. It all depends. Again, that is something you'll want to check with your local fiscal office. So, interestingly enough, High Revised Code 307.51c3 says, we are supposed to ask our counties for general revenue funds to supplement our income as part of the budget process. Well, I can ask until I'm blue in the face and I'll never get any. But make sure to ask, because you never know until you ask. And plead poverty is always a good best practice. And tell them all the great things you can do if you had more money. Judy, anything on that?
We kind of go through a little dance every fall where I ask them for $10 of general revenue money, and they record that they have voted no, and then we are in compliance.
So I believe there may still be 1 or 2 county law libraries out there that are still receiving some general fund dollars, and it used to be much, much greater. But unfortunately, the reality is a lot of counties don't have money to support us, even though most county law libraries are part of their justice services. So to get your bills paid, you need to submit vouchers, probably, to your county auditor, who then issues the checks to your vendors and suppliers. And some of you may need to inquire about whether your vendors have to be registered to do business with your county, whether you have any Small Business Administration requirements, whether you have an Inspector General's office like we do that certifies all contractors and vendors. And there may be online procurement software systems. Like, I know we're kind of weird here in Cuyahoga County, But all our vendors have to register online to do business too. So just check with your local fiscal offices again, because the practices are different everywhere you go. So
It would probably be a good idea, if you're not already, you know, if you haven't already worked for the county for multiple years, to plan to spend half a day with somebody in your auditor's office, learn what their language is, what are they calling things, how do they want, you know, things processed, do you need a counter signature on things over a certain amount of money, how can you make this roll smoothly? I know it's inconvenient for you to take off half a day, but I think in the long run, it's really going to save you a lot of time.
Yeah, great suggestion. So you all have a special revenue fund, which is where all of your fines and penalties are supposed to go. And just to let you know, this is supposed to be held within the county's treasurer, but it may not be in a separate bank account. It may just be in, you know, your county's key bank account. But they're not allowed to spend your money. There is one major exception to that. But as a general rule, they cannot spend your funds. And you're only supposed to be able to spend what has been appropriated. So that's part of the budget process, is to really plan ahead well. Judy, you wanted to mention something about the refund here.
Yeah. If you're looking at the webpage, under Auditor of State, it's been labeled as Fines and Penalties Income Structure. It's a 31-page document, and please make a note that when you get to page 31, paragraph 3, draw a line through that. That no longer applies, because we are now a county agency and we don't pay this money back to anybody. You can also refer to the Auditor's Bulletin 2009-09, and at the end of that, Auditor Taylor also says, oh, and by the way, we're not doing the refund anymore.
Gotcha. And that chart that Judy referenced has a cheat sheet on the first couple of pages to kind of give you the flow of how you're supposed to receive money. But talking about the fines and penalties distribution is way beyond today. And, you know, there was some guidance at a prior training. It was called LLRB 101. And Judy can provide those materials if you'd like them. And there are some statutory caps and different types of revenue you can receive from different types of citations. So definitely take a look at that.
And I'll just take a moment here to mention that we do have an AG's opinion, 2014-040. It was provided to the Wood County Prosecutor's Office, and it does address a little bit of the fact that just because you've received a statutory amount because of your population doesn't mean there's a cap on your traffic fine. So be sure and take a look on that. Maybe copy people just to be sure you're in compliance.
Gotcha. And maybe we'll have a future training specifically devoted to that if people express an interest. So there's a quick mention in the materials about multi-county law library resource commissions. And what those are is if adjacent county law libraries want to get together to collaborate and maybe share resources or share the services of a staff member, they can sign a 3 to 5 year contract. And I'm not aware that any CLLRBs have done this in relation to others, but it is available to a device if you want to. So we've already covered prosecutor representation. Let's move on to the consortium. The consortium is what's providing your training today, and all CLLRBs, all county law libraries, are actually already a member. And you know about your dues, probably, that are due every year. And the key point to remember is that it's only payable, 2% is only payable on your prior year's fines and penalties. If you generated service fees or got grants, don't tax 2% on that, okay? Let's see. So the CLLRB has a lot of responsibilities. It has negotiated various contracts with vendors that are available for you to take advantage of. Like we have free Casemaker. Casemaker is an Ohio bar product, and it provides all the primary law for Ohio. And the information about that is on the website. And we have discounted access to Ohio Capital Connection, if you like that, for Ohio legislative history info. The consortium is also picking up the tab for the Lexis Digital Library platform of ebooks. You have to buy your own e-content, But the consortium will pay for you to have access to that system. There are also Walters Kluwer databases. We're working on OJI. I think it's, if it's not back, it will be. we have a lot.
It will be back. We have executed that contract, and the OJI should ship in mid to late April.
Fantastic. We also have an agreement with Library World for a union catalog I'll mention in a minute. And we buy various books, including court rules and some of the handy reference guides you like in your library. So check again the website and meeting minutes from the consortium. I mentioned the catalog. We do have a union catalog through a company called Library World, and we already have over 32 libraries participating. And really its purpose is twofold. It's so that your patrons know what you have and to facilitate resource sharing between each other, because we have a distribution system where we share electronic resources between our libraries, and we can even share our print if we're able to do that. And that's our interlibrary loan system that we use. And the union catalog really helps in determining what other libraries have. So if you'd like to participate and you're not already, I checked with Angela Baldry, and she's at the Franklin County Law Library, and she'll help you along with that. You can also obviously ask Judy, our boss. Let's see what else. We also have other opportunities to share our resources. Many of us have canceled print resources, and some of the rest of us would be able to maybe share pocket parts from those sets. And so we have a pocket part exchange. And the list of the pocket part senders and recipients is listed on the webpage under the Documents tab. And it's closed for this year, but if you want to get in the sharing next year, that would be great. We need more people to share resources with libraries that can't afford them anymore. Birds. let's see. We have also, the consortium has also, as part of its responsibility, developing some collection development and access guidelines. It's actually a group that's been appointed by ORAL to kind of help us decide what are some good recommendations for, you know, things we should keep, whether in print, electronically, or free on the web. But AALL, which is kind of like the parent organization of law libraries in this country, it has promulgated some standards for county public libraries, and I put the link in the materials. AALL also has some a collection development toolkit, and there are a lot of resources and sample collection development policies you might want to take a peek at, and I provided the link in the materials as well. Judy, you want to talk about our consultation assistance?
Oh, sure. You can send me an email. You can call me on the phone. What I'm permitted to do is to give you information. So if I know there's an OAD's opinion, I know there's a county prosecutor's opinion, I remember where it is in the revised code, I will absolutely provide that to you. But I will also always remember to say, oh, and by the way, you need to talk to your county prosecutor's office. So we do our best. And also, as I think we mentioned earlier, a lot of our counties were willing to share our documents with you. Here are our policies. Here's our public record statement. But again, always go back and check with your county prosecutor's office.
And the consortium itself can be approached as an entity. If you're having a particular issue in your county or problem with a commissioner, you can ask the consortium. It won't volunteer unless asked, but it can write letters, it can participate in meetings. I know the judge, Schneider, who's the chair of the consortium, is very interested in helping resolve some issues, and I think we've had some success there. And for those of you who aren't already aware, the listserv is a great place to post an email and ask for, you know, just help from our colleagues across the state. So, and everyone is a member of that listserv automatically. Angela maintains it, and she made sure that every county law library has at least one email in that system. So the last job that the consortium has done is provide some grants. And every year we have had an annual grant process. And county law libraries can apply for funding for staff training, career development, programming for patrons, technology, and even these multi-app agencies collaborations. And the grant cycle's closed right now, and awards will be issued in April, but hopefully we'll do it again next year. We've also issued other types of grants, like to help offset the consortium dues, you know, your 2%. Not doing that this year. And in the past, we've also had grants to help people attend meetings and training sessions. Haven't really decided on that this year because the Franklin County Law Library is picking up the tab for food and copies and things like that related to our April 22nd training. So, you know, there may be news about that later in the year, if we have money.
Right. Yeah, that's always the question.
Exactly. So, another topic we have in our materials are session laws. We get this question once in a while here, and there's been discussion on the listserv. There is a revised code section that states that the Ohio Secretary of State may distribute print or electronic copies of the session laws. Those are the new laws that have been promulgated down in Columbus. But it's may, not must. And so the Secretary of State has stopped publishing them in print. So you won't be getting any more copies. Good idea to keep your old ones on the shelf. And there's a link in the materials, actually two different links, to websites, authoritative websites, where you can get the newer ones. Okay? Let's see, County Records Commission and document retention. That's something we want to cover. I know it's a pain in the you know where, but each county has a County Records Commission that can help you. Every county law library is supposed to create a records retention policy. It's also called an RC2, and why in the heck would you need one? Well, it can really come in handy because you can't throw away anything unless you have one. And it can really help when you're responding to a subpoena or a public records request, because your records retention policy says what you have to keep and for how long. And so if within the policy you've disposed of something, you have no obligation to turn it over. And you don't have to get special permission when you want to get rid of something, which is great, because if you don't have a policy, you have to obtain permission for special one-time disposals. And I had to do that one time, and it was a pain. Now we have a policy in place. And you don't have to start from scratch if you want one, or if your county makes you write one. And there are a lot of samples at the Ohio History Center's website, and the links in your materials. And there's a good article in the ORL newsletter from 2012, the links in your materials. And the consortium has posted it. Many county law libraries have posted theirs. And they're very willing to share.
The other thing that I would suggest is that you get a letter from your county prosecutor's office saying that your LLRB is the successor to your law library association. This doesn't apply if you still have an active LLA, but we do not. So we have a letter that says the LLRB is the successor to the law library association. And that means that the Law Library Association boxes of paperwork that I have, I can also dispose of those as per my records retention policy. Otherwise, I'd have to keep those forever.
Absolutely. And things that you might want to put on your policy that you might not think you have to are books. I put just general collection on my policy so that when a book is superseded, I can put it on my book cart for sale, or I can recycle it. Or I can give it to somebody else who needs it through the pocket part exchange. It's just a really great great way to be able to run your library seamlessly. So the next topic is your annual inventory. The Ohio Revised Code requires every county office or department to prepare an annual inventory of all their materials, machines, tools, and supplies every January. Now, my county includes me in this responsibility. Yours may or may not. And if you do prepare one, some things you might want to put on there. List your catalog, or at least your print collection generally. I do. That way, you know, I'm insuring it against loss in the event of a fire or, you know, some kind of another act of God. And other things you might include are computers and copy machines, furniture, and anything else that's expensive. You wouldn't want to put, you know, pens and paper and things like that on it. And your county may, like mine, have local rules on monetary thresholds as guidance for what you're supposed to put on your list and what you can exclude. Like my county said this year, anything under $1,000, you don't have to list. Well, they did it after I gave them the inventory, of course. Thanks to Mary Jenkins, I have to give her kudos. We are now allowed to accept credit cards. Brand new in 2015, you can accept credit cards for your service fees and gifts if you create a written rule that allows you to do so. And remember, we talked about promulgating rules for things like public access and accepting fees and gifts. This is where you would do it. It's simple. And you can accept other types of revenue by credit cards, like taxes, assessments, fines and penalties, like if a city or a county, a city or a township wants to pay their fines and penalties on credit. You can accept that if your county allows that, okay? So not every CLRB has that option, okay? So again, there are a couple big ifs, so check with your county on that, probably your local fiscal office. Anybody, who's using credit cards should probably talk to Mary Jenkins at the Hamilton County Law Library, because she may be doing it already. There, I put in a plug, Mary. Procurement cards. I don't know if you have heard of something called a P card. There's a statute that allows counties to issue P cards to all their entities if they want them to be able to buy things with a county credit card. Not every county does it, and they may put restrictions on how much you can spend. And of course, P cards can only be used for work-related expenses. So check. I mean, if you want the ability to buy things quicker, and if your board allows it, maybe you can get a P card. Let's see. You also may have an ADP board locally. That is called an automatic data processing board. And everybody's different. By statute, ADP boards are supposed to coordinate the use of all tech or technology in the county. And that could include, you know, Lexis, Westlaw, the purchase of computers and software, all those kind of things. So you may have to get permission from your ADP board prior to purchasing these things. So again, check to see if you have one and what their requirements are. So let's see. We have a few attorney general opinions listed in our materials. We talked about prosecutor appointments. A biggie, a really big one, is 2010-01. It's extremely important that you know about this one. It requires your commissioners, and they have a duty, to provide you with offices and necessary facilities. That's actually a quote. And those facilities have to allow you, the facilities have to result in expeditious and economical administration of your county law library. So you need space, sufficient space, to provide the services that your county needs. And you're supposed to be treated like any other county office, except you can't be charged for space or utilities, indirect costs, which is kind of fuzzy, overhead, centralized services, which could be cleaning services, or support services. And that opinion says that. So don't try, don't let your counties pass on those kind of expenses. There's one major exception that allows your automatic data processing boards to charge you for tech-related services. So if you've got county computers on a county network, they can charge you for having those, maintaining those, etc. Judy, anything on that?
Yeah, I know we've had several counties over the years that have called to ask, well, can they charge me for their phone services? Can they charge me for the postage? The answer is, if they are charging other county departments for the phone services and the postage, then yes, they can also charge the law library for the phone services and the postage. But you're the same as any other county department, so if they're not charging it back to the agriculture office and the prosecutor's office and whoever else, then no. They can't charge it back to you, and that's just the easy answer.
Exactly. Yeah, my county has tried to charge me for various things, and I make them back it out of my account once I point to this opinion. So diplomacy rules, because it can be a very sensitive topic in your county. Okay, let's see what else we want to cover. Public records. There are a lot of rules on public records, and arguably these apply to county law libraries under the statutes. If they do apply to us, and we are required to make our public records available. And records aren't just all records, but they are those that we create or receive or come under our jurisdiction related to documenting our organization, our functions, our policies, decisions, procedures, operations, and activities. So that's pretty comprehensive. There are plenty of exceptions, though. Certain things are not included as public records. If we have a discrimination charge pending against us, our intellectual property documents, other documents which cannot be disclosed under the law, like HIPAA records, like confidential employee medical records. That's just an example. The best practice on this one, because the statute is not very crystal clear on this, is to ask your local prosecutor if you're not sure about disclosing something, because you may get a public records request and or a subpoena. And a public records request is a very nebulous concept. And a person can make an anonymous request for public records from your entity. It can be made orally, and they do not have to put it in writing. They do not have to disclose their identity, even if you ask them. And if they refuse to disclose, you still have to disclose the public records to them. You can charge them, you know, your cost if you want. You have to do so in a reasonable period of time. And if you refuse to provide anything, you have to give an explanation. But definitely when you get one or get a subpoena, check with your local prosecutor to see what you should be doing. And, of course, advise your board members. Having that document retention policy, again, is key to being able to say you do or do not have something that you can disclose. Library records and patron info. This is something that applies to public libraries. And if you're open to the public, it arguably could apply to you. And what it does is it protects certain library records and patron information from disclosure. And so if you do get a public records request or a subpoena, consult this statute and your local prosecutor to determine whether or not you have to disclose those particular documents. And obviously this is a really quick and dirty overview of public records laws. So the Attorney General has a Sunshine Laws manual online that we've got a link for. And they also do in-person training sessions, and they have them all over the state live, and I would highly recommend that you attend one. So the link to the training opportunities is in the materials. Anything else on that, Judy?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. Ideally, one of your board members should also attend the training. It's really helpful if one of them says, oh, we can't do that, or we must do this, or something, and I went to the training, and I know it. I have spent 20 minutes or more convincing people. I've been to the training. This is what they told us. I'm sorry, guys. We really have to do this. It's just really helpful if you've got a board member sitting there going, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it's really great, and the training's very helpful. Okay, the final topic that we'd like to cover before taking questions is open meetings. And again, this is a big topic. We're going to just do a brief overview and recommend the Attorney General's Sunshine Laws training manual and their training as well, their live training. So the High Revised Code contains open meeting laws, and that does apply to all public bodies, which arguably includes county law libraries. So a meeting is any prearranged discussion of the public business of the body by a majority. So that's three people. So if you have three CLLRB members getting together, whether it's, you know, in person or at a special meeting or a committee, that's covered, and that needs to be open to the public. There are certain exceptions that do not have to be held in the public eye, and you can go, your board can go into an executive session. We've listed those in the material. Some of the key ones. If you're going to talk about employment or discipline of someone, then you can go into an executive session, unless that person who's being discussed wants it open. If you're buying real estate, which you probably are not, that would be another topic. If you want to talk to your attorney about public or imminent court action involving your county law library, that's another reason for an executive session. If you're entering into collective bargaining agreements or negotiations with the union, probably not an issue. If there's anything confidential under the federal law or state statutes that you need to talk about, you can go into an executive session. And if you're talking about security for the building or your law library, that would be another one. So, interestingly enough, CLLRB meetings have to be held live. They cannot be held online, even if your rules say so. That's what the statute provides. So open meetings don't mean open online meetings. And I know that that can be frustrating sometimes when you're trying to get people there. So those minutes Judy mentioned earlier have to be made of all your meetings. And if you do go into executive session, just generally mention that you went in to discuss discipline or real estate or security or whatever it was. So that pretty much concludes the training, unless you have other comments, Judy.
No, I think that covers what we're going to do today. If we hear from a lot of people that they'd like to have a presentation on the fines and penalties, we can set that up for later this summer, but we didn't want to try and cover that today. It's just a whole other hour, an hour and a half of itself.
Exactly. So now we have time for questions. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Can't have been that crystal clear.
They probably still have their phones on mute.
So,
some of the call I had to miss because I was what I'm doing. So.
Okay, sure.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I just have a question. If I email my board as a group, what are we allowed to discuss via email? I mean, I know most things need board approval, but are we allowed to have a discussion back and forth on certain issues via email?
Well, that's...
You can have the discussion, but ask yourself, if somebody files a public records request, do you want to produce that email?
Okay.
Do you want that out there floating around?
Right.
Personally, I send really brief, almost cryptic emails. And I'll give you an example. Right now we are negotiating with West and Lexis for passwords for the judges, magistrates, staff attorneys, and so on.
Great.
And
yeah.
I'll say, I have these documents. Do you want them emailed to you? But I don't say what's in them.
Right.
Or I'll say, I have them at the law library. Can you swing by? I'm going to talk to the prosecutor about this paragraph. But I don't go into a lot of detail because, again, if it becomes a public record, then I've got other issues. The other thing that you have to be really careful about is training your board members not to indicate how they're going to vote in the email.
Okay.
That
right.
should never happen until you're sitting in the meeting.
Okay. I figured that, but I know it's kind of a fine line, and I have been aware of that and just thought, well, maybe I'm just, overreacting or, you bring up a really good point with the, with the public records. So thank you. Thanks, girls and ladies. It was very nice. Appreciate it.
Sure. Any other questions?
This is Mary Jenkins. I have a question. Kathy, you talked about the records retention schedule and incorporation of your collection of books from your library into that. I've approached it differently, where we have, I worked with our purchasing department, which is responsible for the discard of unneeded, surplus equipment and stuff, and we wrote up protocol for removal of material, but I like what you described. My question is about modifications to records retention schedule. Has anyone someone actually been through that, does it seem like it would be worth doing to move from standard accepted protocol for getting rid of unneeded materials and switching over to it just as a standard part of the records retention schedule?
Now, I was just so happy to finally get my record retention schedule through the county process and my board process that we haven't even thought about trying to modify it.
And just to anticipate problems, I was as comprehensive as I possibly could be, because here it would be a rather large logistical hurdle to amend and modify my policy, because my county's agency that oversees this process, you know, doesn't meet that often, and the process is a lot of red tape. And that may not be the same in every county. So if it's quick in and out, then I guess amending it is no big deal.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I think I'll stick with, you know, it seems to be working, so that's good. But I can imagine a day when, you know, if the people who were involved in the development of that protocol over in our purchasing office are no longer there, it could get sticky. So I'm going to keep in mind the possibility of revision. I sit on our county records commission, and it's really easy here to get changes made, I think, so I'm not too concerned about that. And thanks for all of your insights on everything else.
Oh, sure. Any other questions or comments?
Were you going to share the link about being able to hear the call? I wasn't able to hear all the training. I had to jump off for just a little bit and get back on, so.
Oh, sure.
You're going to be able to.
Sure.
The recording, I mean.
This is Kathy, and so far it's taped 51, almost 52 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Barring any technical glitches, yes, it should be an MP4A file, and I was thinking we could maybe ask Angela to post it to the website, or if we don't feel that would be appropriate, we can definitely send out the link or with the password and put it on our website. Do you know what I mean? We will figure out how to distribute this file. You know, some people don't get attachments when we send out stuff on the consortium listserv. So we can do it a couple of ways. Do you know what I mean? But yes, if everything works like I planned, that file should be available shortly.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you very much. It was very nice.
Oh, good. Any other comments or questions? Okay, well, Judy, what do you think? Should we wrap it up and let everybody go to lunch?
I think we're done for today. Again, let me know if you really, really want to sit and try and do something on the fiscal piece of it, and we can try and set that up for later this summer.
And the only thing is a reminder about the training on Friday, April 22nd in Columbus at the Franklin County Law Library. There will be additional training as part of a joint consortium and County Law Library Spring Retreat. Okay, well, thank you all for joining us, and have a good rest of the day.
Thank you all for the training.